We're living through what Rabbi Jonathan Sacks calls a cultural climate change, a profound shift from we to I that has transformed Western society over the past half century. This isn't abstract philosophy, but measurable reality. Google searches show I usage skyrocketing since 1965, while we remains flat. Pop music lyrics between 1980-2007 reveal the same pattern. More self-reference, fewer words expressing positive social connections. What happens when individualism becomes our highest value? Any functioning social institution requires occasional sacrifice of self-interest for collective good. Without we consciousness, relationships crumble, communities dissolve, and nations fragment. The consequences are all around us. More people living alone than ever before, 40% of households in major cities. A loneliness epidemic so severe, Britain appointed its first minister for loneliness. And research showing isolation is as harmful as smoking 15 cigarettes daily. Our individualism has liberated us to live as we choose, but at devastating cost to our well-being. The self-help industry's fundamental premise is flawed. The self is where problems begin, not where they end. Viktor Frankl demonstrated this in Auschwitz, maintaining his will to live by refusing to let the Nazis define his situation. Rather than seeing himself as a victim, he viewed himself as a scientist conducting an experiment on humanity. He helped others by identifying missions only they could fulfill, leading to logotherapy, healing based on finding meaning beyond oneself. The essence was recognizing what life wants from us rather than what we want from life. Iris Murdoch called this unselfing, where the first person singular falls silent as we acknowledge we're not the universe's center. Morality derives its power from our ability to both feel our emotions and stand outside them, considering others and consequences. True fulfillment comes through responding to needs beyond ourselves. Social media has fundamentally altered young people's development, often devastatingly. Comparing themselves to curated online profiles leaves many feeling inadequate and depressed. These platforms transform experiences into advertisements for myself, reducing meaningful moments to photo opportunities. Research shows smartphones physically alter young brains, creating chemical imbalances while shortening attention spans. Even a switched-off phone nearby reduces cognitive capacity. The consequences are severe: rising depression, eating disorders, substance abuse, and self-harm, particularly among teenage girls. A 2018 British study found nearly a quarter of 14-year-old girls had self-harmed within a year. Human interaction increasingly happens electronically rather than face-to-face, with teenagers preferring text communication because it's less stressful, resulting in declining empathy and social skills. Ironically, tech pioneers strictly limited their own children's screen time. Steve Jobs forbade iPads. Bill Gates limited screen time to 45 minutes on weekdays. Something essential is lost when interaction isn't face-to-face: the affective dimension that makes us feeling persons in relation with others. Marriage represents the supreme consecration of we within culture, two people joining in covenant to build a life together. For immigrant communities and throughout Jewish history, strong families created resilient communities that survived persecution. The 1960s dealt a blow to Western marriage as sex became disconnected from commitment, creating new forms of financial and moral poverty in single-parent families. Social scientific evidence overwhelmingly shows children benefit from stable marriages with two parents. Divorce harms children, and single parenthood even more so, affecting childhood aggression, delinquency, educational achievement, and emotional health. A troubling divide has emerged. The top third of society briefly experimented with new freedoms, but largely returned to traditional conventions, while the bottom third couldn't resist the cultural current, creating communities without adult role models. Many young men from broken families express desires to provide structure and presence for their children that they never had themselves, representing a profound injustice inflicted by a generation that embraced sex without responsibility. Corporate failures like Carillion's 2018 collapse exemplify recklessness, hubris, and greed in modern business. Executives collected generous bonuses while the company imploded, leaving $7 billion in liabilities and 43,000 jobs at risk. During the 2008 financial crash, bankers similarly gambled with others' money while protecting their own compensation. Justice seems instinctual. Franz De Waal's experiments showed capuchin monkeys rejected rewards when peers received better compensation for identical work. The market economy requires this moral foundation. Adam Smith wrote The Theory of Moral Sentiments before The Wealth of Nations, understanding markets need trust and ethics. While markets excel at generating wealth and fostering creativity, they don't inherently ensure equity. When market thinking invades inappropriate areas, we seek fulfillment in the wrong places. Despite average incomes more than doubling over the past century, people aren't significantly happier, suggesting Aristotle was right, that genuine happiness is an activity of the soul in accordance with virtue, not endless consumption. Western liberal democracy faces an existential crisis. Trust in politicians has plummeted, in Britain falling to just 26%, while in America only 18% trust government to do the right thing, down from 75% in 1958. Research shows millennials increasingly losing faith in democracy itself, with a quarter viewing it as a bad system. The Anglo-American democratic tradition recognizes three key social arenas: the state, individuals, and civil society. This third sector of voluntary association creates what de Tocqueville called the apprenticeship of liberty. As the moral sense shifts from we to I, these vital civil institutions have weakened. When civil society deteriorates, people make demands the state cannot satisfy, creating strong families, supportive communities, or providing children with stable parents. Without collective responsibility, we witness the secession of the successful, the rich separating themselves with no special responsibility to the poor. Identity politics fragments society into self-segregating groups, claiming that only a member of my group can understand my pain. Nations thrive through diversity when it coexists with shared national identity. By being what we uniquely are, we contribute what only we can give. Unlike environmental climate change requiring billions to change, cultural climate change begins with individual moral choices. We can make immediate differences through caring, trustworthiness, giving, and listening. Research confirms giving increases happiness, and even young children show empathy, suggesting altruism is innate. The crucial distinction is between contracts and covenants. Contracts are self-interest transactions. Covenants create transformative relationships based on loyalty, where people form a we. Contracts concern interests, covenants concern identity, and create moral communities bound by mutual responsibility. Lincoln embodied covenantal thinking during America's Civil War. Rather than demonizing opponents, he showed humility, established the first National Thanksgiving Day, and urged malice toward none with charity for all, viewing America as a moral community. The COVID-19 pandemic illustrated this book's central theme. Western liberal democracies have had too much I and too little we. As we emerge from global crises, we have an opportunity to strengthen human solidarity, humility before nature, social responsibility, and kindness. The choice between repeating history's mistakes or building stronger structures of togetherness is ours, and the time to choose is now.